Well, good morning, or good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Good to see all of you as friends and brothers. It's just a wonderful atmosphere and a wonderful environment that we have here in the church. And I could look at every single one of you, and we could sit interchangeably at dinner and at council meetings, and it's just very, very wonderful. I was intrigued by that card that was received by the church, signed Agape. It was just very, very beautiful. It brings up a story about Johnny Lambert, who used to write to the Estonian brethren all the time, and he always signs his letters Agape. Well, some of them didn't know English too well. And after about a year, they said, "Why do you always end your letters with your mouth open?" They just looked it up in the dictionary, "Agape" with your mouth open. So it took them a year to pick up on the fact that that meant the love of God. I used to stay awake at night, get up in the morning, and sometimes stay up for 2 hours with anxiety, wondering what the next day will bring. You know, who will we face? What memos will we get? What petitions? Whatever, you know, would be coming our way. So let me say that I still wake up in the middle of the night, but I lay awake thinking about much better things and much more positive things. I'm thinking about how we can move forward with our congregations and staff our pastorates and our congregations with people who can truly serve them and find the right servants. I think about what we're going to be doing to train our new ministers in the craft of being a pastor. And I'm thinking about, can we use this? Can we talk to this grouping of people? How can we educate our ministers? Gary Antion and I talk about just different ways that we can do things possibly to train our ministers through the resources that we have within our own means and also through perhaps some other outside means. I think about how we can build teamwork and how we could maintain peace. One thing I think about very, very often is about the fact that I cherish our ability to be at peace, to truly have this opportunity window that we've never really had. We've never had since the beginning of the United Church of God to this degree, to where we really all are at peace with one another. How can we maintain it, and how can we keep it, and how can we keep from any Luciferian behavior, creep into the kinds of things that we've seen happen before? Some of what I just talked about are objectives to the strategic plan, where we are working and talking about how we will be fulfilling and how I can say how we will be eagerly fulfilling. Every time that I have a speak, I give a listing of statistics, which I'm going to abbreviate, because what I did is place some of the more relevant statistics on the council website, the one that I have given you before for the different business items that we have. But I put down background documents for February 27th. Chris Rowland and I have tried to rein in as many relevant facts as we have so that we could have them readily available, so that on Google Docs I can go and get them from anywhere I'm in the country and know statistics about the church. Some of them, and there's six documents up there, elder statistics, U.S. attendance, camps, feast, international areas administration, and also international summary. And it really contains a thumbnail sketch of many, many bits of news that you will find useful. I've taken this from our Google Docs, our internal documents, and turned them into PDFs, and you can either view them or download them. I'll keep them up there through the duration of the council meetings. But some of the key statistics is that we have, around the world, 333 elders, of which 263 are in the U.S. and 70 are internationally. In the United States, we have 80 ministers who are pastors, associates, or assistants. That's outside the ones who are local church elders, of which 68 are full-time and 6 are salaried part-time and 6 are volunteer. So that gives you the levels of pastorship that we have. That's been a number that's been creeping up. We have had two new hires since the last meeting that we had, and we actually have a new category that's back after many, many years called ministerial trainee. These are people who have been hired as into the work of the ministry, but who are not yet ordained. And we've not had this because we had all the pastors possible. And to me, this is an encouraging trend, is that we're looking at new people for evaluation purposes, for training, to see how they will work and fit in to the ministry. We've hired David Jones, who is an ambassador Bible ABC student, and he is being trained by Steve Myers, and will be here through about feast time or so. But Steve Myers has him conduct clubs, has him do visiting, and he's teaching him the craft of the ministry. Sometime after the feast, he'll be reassigned to another area. Another ministerial trainee is a person that we just hired, is Chuck Smith. And Chuck Smith has been very, very active in the Caribbean. He and his wife, Mary, at their own expense, have served in the Caribbean for a number of years and have really made a big difference. And especially after the division that we had, they have been a unifying force. They'll be traveling with the Lucers later this month or in the month of March to the Caribbean, particularly to Tobago. We had four who have left our fellowship, one pastor and three local church elders. So we're down a net of one minister since the last time I have spoken. Another key statistic is church attendance. It's a very, very important indicator. While it may not be the all number, but nonetheless, it's a baseline number. There are two numbers that I really look at as far as where we stand. One is the number of people who attend on a weekly basis, not the number of the people on the books, not the number if they all came and they all showed up. Sometimes when you ask a minister how many people attend the church, well, if they all show up, it'll be, 85. Well, how many were there? Well, 22. maybe stretching that a little bit, but, the number of people who actually come to church really is a very, very important indicator. But here's the statistics, and they basically have been flat, which I'm not discouraged by, because we did have a rough year with predatory action, with people even boasting that they will take more people from us in very open ways. But last January, and these numbers, again, are on this website, so you can see them for yourself. So you don't have to be writing a lot of things down very quickly. But January, a year ago, January 2011, we had an attendance of 7,600 people. And then, I'll just kind of go quickly through the months. February, 7,300, 74, 74, 72, 72, 72, 74, 72, 76, 74, and 72. So you see, statistically, it's flat through the whole year. And this is the numbers as they are added up from the monthly church reports, their actual numbers, and this is U.S. Worldwide, the average is slightly under 11,000. It's about 10,900 something. That is the number that we have. Again, those numbers are available for you to peruse more at your leisure. With the death of one elder, Doug Bosshart, in the San Francisco area, a person that many people had known for a long time. Perhaps we announced that last time. That was before December. We've been communicating. In fact, one reason why I'm not giving you absolutely a detailed report about everything, because we've been communicating with you on a weekly basis through our e-news. And we started it as just every so often a newsletter, and then we started doing it every week. And actually, it's a very useful internal newsletter for us, because it keeps us organized. It keeps us, on track, and gives me opportunity to say, Gary, you got anything for the e-news? Peter, Gary and Peter are the most prolific. They always have something for the e-news. And we're able to quickly share information. So I put it together with a newsletter program called Constant Contact. Chris Rowland reviews it, proofreads it, and usually our goal is every Thursday afternoon we send it to everyone else. It's sent to elders, deacons, home office staff, and some other key people. We have nearly 900 some people who receive the e-news. It's not really a totally private newsletter. It's semi-private, and people take chunks and bits out of it for their bulletins and services and so forth. We try to keep it like a blog with having the very latest news. We had the festival coordinators meeting here at the home office this past month. They were conducted by Roy Holiday. In fact, I was not here for them. I was gone overseas. But Roy Holiday conducted the meetings, which I felt this year were watershed meetings because the feast and the way it's organized and the sites are changing a bit. Our people are getting older. Our people can't travel as far. We started with a few satellite sites, and that's been growing to where the satellite sites have become the eye of many people, including people that maybe should go to a major site that wanted to go to a smaller site. By the way, this might be a good place to mention it. You know, we, Melvin and I have an announcement sort of to make.
Oh. Yes.
We just found out that Melvin's daughter, my daughter-in-law, Michael and Alex, well, we found out that she was pregnant. This was, you know, a month ago or so. Then this last Wednesday, my son excitedly called me and says, we're having twins. So we're going to call one Cubic and one Rose.
The Day After Atonement.
Yeah, they're due after Day of Atonement. So why do I bring this up? Well, because I want to talk about that. Secondly, it's because we're thinking about possibly, you know, going to the feast very close by. So we may come to Cincinnati ourselves, you know, for the feast to be here when, you know, the baby comes. Anyway, let's get back on to other things here. The feast. There was a discussion about these smaller sites, which are becoming needed for elderly people. I know in our Terre Haute congregation, some ladies said, oh, if we could just have a feast here in Terre Haute, I could make it all the time. But I don't know if I could make it, you know, to Branson and other places like that. We talked about the feast planning calendar, webcasting, special music, festival planning brochure, and Gary Ante led a very important discussion on youth education and specialty seminars at the feast sites. We have concluded two of our area conferences, which have been very, very well received, because we've not had conferences for some time, but they are important, very important for ministers to see one another, for us to interact with them. We've held one here in Cincinnati, then we held one in January in Atlanta, Georgia, and had a very, very great meeting with the ministers there. Our theme is 2 Corinthians 1:24, which is not that we have dominion over your faith, but our fellow workers for your joy. Minister's job is to be one who is a helper of the joy that people have of salvation. And I feel that one of the most profound focus meetings on Monday was given by Chris Rowland, where he brought up a little stuffed sheep. I thought, what in the world is this going to be about? And he said, this is what my work is about. You know, it's about the sheep. And sometimes when we have boxes and plans and strategic issues and so forth, let's not forget what it's all about. It's about the people. It's about their salvation. It's about their joy. It's about their future. And everything should be involved, everything should revolve around what we can do to bring more joy to a person's life. Not to be an obstacle, not to be a judge, not to be a policeman, not to have dominion over their faith, but to be a helper of their joy. That's what this is all about. But in these area conferences, which have been a blend of discussion and focused lectures. We didn't want to just stand up there for an hour and a half and just go on and on and on, but to take half an hour, 40 minutes, perhaps as much as that, for some teaching, and then to have some discussion about the points that we had at hand. Some of the most requested subjects from the new pastors have been, you know, how do I give an interesting sermon week in and a week out? As a local church elder, and I've been one for a long time, a person has said, I gave my favorite topic. My pastor never really even checked with me, but I talked about something I really enjoyed talking about. Also, as a local church elder, I didn't have to answer any questions. I just answered all the softball questions, you know. Is it a nice day? Yes, it is a nice day, you know. Just simple things like that. But as pastor now, before I could just say, look, I can't answer that. Let the big man, let the pastor answer that question. Well, now I have to answer those questions. And, you know, I'd like to have some more guidance and counseling. Like I said, I've got a young couple coming over tomorrow night. I don't know what they're going to ask me, and I don't know what I'm going to tell them. So I need some guidance and some help and some direction in counseling for marriage, for preparation, you know, for marriage. Another one says, I'm a new pastor. I have three churches. I've never been in a situation like that at all. I've been in this profession, and I've done very well at it, but now I have to speak in three churches. You know, I know I can only do two out of three each time. You know, what's the best way to manage my time? How often do I visit? Who should I visit? How should I do it? All these are questions that have come up again. Another big question, and one that has been a benefit to all of us, has been discussion about divorce and remarriage. We basically, in 1995, took a snapshot of where we stood at the Worldwide Church of God regarding the subject of marriage and divorce doctrinally, and rolled it over into the United Church of God. We've made a few statements since that time in study papers that had a few, additions to what was there. But we asked Vernon Hargrove to give a chronological, historical description of where we have been on the subject of marriage and divorce. Going back to pre-1974, going into actually the late 50s, when the first black and white booklet was written with a black stripe down called Marriage and Divorce, or Divorce and Remarriage, and then the famous blue book, you know, late 1973, about marriage and divorce, and then the 1974 statement in Pasadena, where I was at, was the same weekend that the auditorium was dedicated, for those of you who might remember that, plus other statements that have been made. The way we have viewed the subject of porneia, the way that we have defined reasons for divorce and being bound and not bound in 1 Corinthians 7. Well, Vernon Hargrove, we had taped it. We actually did a video of his presentation. And if he can't do it for some of the other conferences, we're going to show that video. But we'll also put that up on our internal website so that everybody can see the history as was very, very well presented by Vern Hargrove. I forgot myself what some of the chronology was and where we stood on certain points, even in 1974, where we didn't have certain things defined about an unbelieving mate until later on. So that was very, very interesting. But we'll put that up. I'll tell you about our new website. Gary Antion also came because his session was rated as the most popular in the Cincinnati conference about counseling resources. I asked him not to necessarily speak about how to counsel in this or that, you know, some specific area, but tell us, you know, where to get the information, you know, where to go, what are some of the best sources, what maybe to stay away from. And he gave a video presentation as well, or we had it videoed so that we can show it to others. Danny Luker spoke about focused education, very good presentation. And Chris Rowland then spoke about our new website, ucgmms.org, which will be rolled out in May. And this website will have some very minister-specific resources. We're populating it with some information right now. One of the chief resources will be sermon outlines. Now, some people say, I can't speak off of anybody else's outline. Well, we're not asking you to. But there are ministers who say, I've sort of run dry of ideas. And you can look at somebody's outline. You don't have to listen to a whole sermon for an hour, but you can look quickly through an outline and say, hey, there's some good points, and there's another good point. And mix and match and use somebody else's thoughts. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. And plagiarism isn't something that, you know, we're against as far as the Bible is concerned. And, you know, take somebody else's ideas and points, and perhaps you can give that sermon better than the original author could. So we're going to be placing quite a number of sermon outlines. We already have how many, Chris, on there? Over 70 or so. And most of them are from Larry Walker and Roy Holiday. Some ministers are very good at creating outlines, and some are very bad. But Roy and Larry Walker have some excellent, easy-to-understand outlines that have been very useful. In fact, if I can honestly confess a fault here, that my editorial for United News this last week was a plagiarism from Roy Halladay's sermon outline on the website, or some of the points were taken from them. Not all of them. Enough to say that, you know, I had something to say about it, too. But you find some points in somebody else's sermon, somebody else's writings, that really strikes to what you want to say, and you can use part of it. And what we want to do is to, for our new ministers in particular, and even our older ministers, to be able to provide these resources. We also want to provide some PowerPoint presentations, and PowerPoints are something that people feel either very, very strongly about something as being a very good resource. Some say, you know, real men don't use PowerPoints, or real ministers don't use PowerPoints. You know, so that's okay, too. You know, if you don't, Jesus didn't use PowerPoints, and so if you don't want to use them, that's fine, too. But there are some who really find PowerPoints to be very, very useful. Yeah, Jesus had miracles, you know, so you sort of beat the system. So this website will have easy-to-find information about everything you need to know regarding the profession of the ministry as we have defined it. It'll have the pastor's policy manual, which we no longer will have make available in print. There's two problems with it. It takes a long time to copy it. Second of all, pages go out of date, and they aren't changed. But online, they can always be refreshed, and you have the very latest. And we have it such to where you can scan the entire document all at once. So if you're looking for some keywords, you will scan all four sections of the policy manual at once. So we will make that available online, which it is right now. The ministerial website still is functioning, but it's very, very clumsy to use. It's actually not been maintained as well as we wanted it to. And instead of fixing it, we've decided to go with the brand new UCGMMS.org, which will be unveiled. Chris's presentation was the only one anybody gave applause for in Atlanta. You might say that it was just very popular. People really appreciated it very much. Our next conferences will be in Pittsburgh in mid-June, then East Texas in August. Don Ward has offered to host it with the East Texas Church. Actually, the population center is more like Oklahoma City, but because they can do it for a much cheaper cost, and it would be nice to be able to have it in our building. It will be held sometime in August. We're still looking at some dates for East Texas. In Stuartville, Minnesota, which is by Albert Lee, just west of Rochester, in November. And then we have the two in the West Coast, Los Angeles and the Northwest, sometime in January and March, and which one is first is yet to be determined. But what we have done is to be able to provide these seven locations where the vast majority of our ministers can drive to those places. There's just a very few, the whole state of Colorado, I mean, Scott, and those people will have to fly. But for the most part, we've been able to have most of our pastors, elders, local church elders, and everyone come to these meetings. We'll also have PCD letters, study letters, and counseling resources. That'll be one really big area where we want to make it interactive as such, where I am looking for something about baptismal counseling. And perhaps, you know, I have seen different outlines for baptismal counseling, many which are very, very good. They're a little bit different from one another, but you can have maybe four or five to choose from and ask, you know, questions in different ways. I mean, I've sat in on counselings for baptism. I've worked with different ministers, and, you know, some have different things that they emphasize, and, you know, perhaps you could put not just one ultimate baptismal counseling outline, but those from a number of ministers that could be useful. Chris and I will be keeping this site up so that it's not to encumber our web development people here, not to burden them, but to be able to just do it ourselves. We think we can do that pretty good. Ministerial Member Services also is very happy to work with another focus group, focus area within our department called Women's Services. And we are very, very pleased to have this in place. At the ministerial conference held last February, which was after our crisis, a number of new wives who found themselves thrust into a full-time or into a more demanding direct contact with the people ministry felt that they did not have adequate support. They didn't know what to do. And sometimes their husband didn't know what to do. But nonetheless, some of the women just felt that they really needed some support that was more from a feminine angle and from a feminine perspective. And so we have conducted a survey in May, which confirmed this need and formed what's now called Women's Services, which has Lisa Fenchel work part-time, and Leanne. It's added something really special to our department. It's just nice to have the ladies. You know, they are part-time. Leanne comes and works on Monday. Lisa, we see her here and there through the week, and we really have appreciated the work that they have done. They have formed an e-forum entitled Connections, which is currently for elders' wives, which we were wondering, would people comment on it? Would people, you know, use it? Well, it's been very, very popularly received. And women have been very verbose and some, a lot of good discussion taking place. Now, as a man, I'm not supposed to, you know, see those things. This is just for the women. But on my BlackBerry, I get Bev's email. So sometimes I'm Victoria Kubik. Sometimes I have, I have peeked at some of the messages. Some of them were just, terrific. There was one by Rayanne Dowd. It was just a phenomenally written letter about keeping the Sabbath and how they kept the Sabbath at the Elliott home as they were growing up as girls. I thought, this is an amazingly mature and outstanding post. I'd like to see that in the United News, perhaps. It was just very, very, very well done. Kingdom of God seminars. This has been, we've gone through two rounds. I feel it's been a brilliant move from the standpoint of content. And I just really want to thank all those who have been involved. Howard Davis was very involved with the content of suggesting, or very much involved in the subject matter of the Kingdom of God. But I don't think that there's anything we could talk about that's more exciting than the Kingdom of God to the world. So we have this four-part series on the Kingdom of God. We have had two of these sessions, and Peter and media will comment about that a little bit more. They basically have done the heavy lifting for organizing the Kingdom of God seminars. Even though it's a joint media and ministerial services project, they have done the hard work for it. We also want to thank all those who have made and developed outlines, PowerPoint presentations, and given support locally in churches for going forth. But we've had about 1,600 people in each of the first two seminars. That's 1,600 more people each, and not all are repeaters. In fact, a small percentage have been repeaters. But people who have come in contact with real United Church of God people and congregations. Then we have been working since the last meeting on our strategic plan, which I'm happy to say that sometimes the process of going through the strategic planning is painful as you think about, how does this fit and how does this work and what can we do and what's realistic and so forth. But I do believe in our discussions we'll have some good talk about our desire to educate our ministers and have some good thoughts, and I have some ideas myself about how we can bring along those who are not the tenured ministers. I call the tenured ministers the ones that have gone through Ambassador College and have been pastors out there for a long time. We don't worry about them as much. You know, it'd be good to have refreshing information, and I appreciate refreshing information. But what are we going to do with our new pastors? You know, it's interesting as we look at resumes for our pastors, and one just sent me his resume, and there's nothing close to what ministers do. I won't talk about it anymore right here, but, it was so different, and yet he's a good minister, But he does need, along with others, to have specific training on what to do as a pastor. So We want to incorporate that into our education process for training ministers. So far, we have the Leadership Weekend over Labor Day weekend. We have the Pastoral Seminar before the GCE, which is only a couple of days. We have area conferences. We have even ABC, if you want to call it that, plus other ways in which we can talk. We do want to have some type of certification for our ministry, whether it's internal, but to say that our ministers, our pastors, have all at least gone through this, you know, they've been to this seminar, and to have some type of statement of qualification, that this is what qualifies you to be a minister. I guess people have come from different professions. I mean, Peter was a fisherman, probably knew a lot about that, you know, and really was not somebody who grew up through the temple system as a Levite. But nonetheless, you know, he did receive very direct training from Jesus. Another area is peacemaking. We called it conflict resolution, which is also a correct term, but I'd like to expand it to peacekeeping as being something that includes conflict resolution. I do feel it's very important for us to be able to maintain the peace that we have now. It's not something that will just happen automatically, because I know it just takes a matter of time before the seeds of discontent and bitterness and unrequited, unanswered issues with anger come in if they're not dealt with. By dealt with, I mean addressed, looked at as Christians. Who should know better to make peace than we in the ministry? There are other organizations in the world that have peacemaking, peacekeeping outreaches in different ways. There's one in Chicago called, what's it called? Ceasefire. You know, people don't realize, but every year, 27,000 people are let out of prisons into the Chicago neighborhoods, into seven neighborhoods. 27,000 people are let there. And Ceasefire works with these people and teaches them basic things like retaliation, not to retaliate. So that we know you're mad, we know you're angry, we know that you want to get back at, you know, whoever it was. They teach them not to retaliate. They teach them other very basic skills. But anyway, I thought it would be good for us as we talk about this as one of the objectives of ministerial member services, is how can we be peacemakers? Now, how can we really get along? Now, how can we keep from getting to the point of where we form alliances? Because that's when it gets bad. You know, or where we form some type of, you know, us and them. And before we are us and them, which is inevitable if you just are out of control, there's things that we should be aware of and to do. Yes?
What is your, and it might be premature, what is the vehicle, and maybe I missed it earlier on the peacekeeping, what is the vehicle? Is it the conference? Is it a video? Is it going to be in the conferences in the future? Is it going to be a method? Is there any part of the vehicle?
All of the above, and particularly, you know, support from the president, and to support from the leadership, that this is the way we need to conduct ourselves as Christians. I think that if we have from the very top, and the example set from the very top, and I'll have to say is that I've never seen anybody, I'm not saying this for any reason other than it being a truth, of Denny Luker who sees the good in everyone. He does so much better job than I do at that, you know, as far as seeing the good in people, forgetting things of the past, moving on, and giving everybody a clean shot at the future. That's what we have to do. And I do know that, in, you know, without revealing anything that, you know, I do, is that, you know, we have to get over things that have taken place, you know, in the past. As people bring up, you know, as we try to bring people together, they say, yeah, but don't you know that so-and-so said this, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. And where in the whole plan of God, you know, and in the realm of things, can we come to a point of releasing ourselves from that monkey of not being able to forgive and to let go and to give somebody a chance? Now, I'm very passionate about this subject. So I really do hope that we can come to the point of where we can talk about this. And look, all those vehicles, the president, a discussion about it. And also, one thing I found, that if it's on our list of action steps in our strategy, then we're forced to do it. You know, it's good being forced. So what are we going to do at the next conference to fulfill this strategy? So we'll have some vehicle, you know, for it. So that will be discussed further as we talk about about that. And also youth and feast. I'll quickly, going on here, too long here. Our budget, we reduced our budget by, you know, we were, Chris was totaling up all the figures from everything that's been sent in, internationally and, well, actually, the U.S. figures. And our budget last year was about $9.5 million. And we totaled up the figures that came in from this year. It was $6.5 million, just exactly a third less. And, of course, we have a third less people, and it looks like, well, we're sort of within budget. But we still have challenges because we have overheads. We're not decreasing ministerial salaries by a third. We've lost ministers, but we're hiring new ones back. If you've been meeting at a hall that's costing you $300 to $400 a time, and you have only half the people or a third less the people, you're still paying the full price for the hall. So we have certain overheads that we still have to overcome. We're trying to cut back on all these things, but it'll be a challenge for us to even live with a third less, even though we have a third less expenses, we think, but the expenses are still there for important overheads. International, I really won't cover too much, except for one thing, is that we hope to be able to tighten up our relationship with our overseas entities, which we are governed by the rules of association. But as we've seen, the rules of association being tested in the division that took place is that not all interpreted them the same way. And so Larry Darden has written a draft constitution and bylaws that tighten up some of the areas dealing with asset management, with responsibility, with other aspects. This has been already discussed with the Philippines at their AGM, their annual general meeting, that Aaron Dean was at, and also in Zambia, we discussed it with our national council there. This is not a replacement for the rules of association, or for the constitutions of the local national entities, but it could be incorporated and should be incorporated, as it will be with the Philippines. They have a lengthier constitution, and these rules will be incorporated there, as the same is true with Zambia. So, I'm going to quit here. There's more I could talk about. A lot has gone on. And as Denny Luker always says, there's a lot going on. And there really is just a lot going on. There's more I could talk about as far as good works and some of the outreaches that we've had, but I'll just leave it be here. I'm happy to say that Bev and I are moving now to Cincinnati. We're looking at houses ferociously. We put an offer on one last week that we didn't... We weren't too sure about it anyway. We didn't get it. But anyway, there's lots of houses around. But we hope to be able to move here sometime after the spring holy days. We love the work here. It's been the most exciting part of my ministry, mainly because I can stay up in the middle of the night for the right reasons.